What's up, everybody? Welcome to another week of NFL Food for Thought right here on Roto Grinders. I am Justin Carlucci with my co-host, Will Priester, who is back, and we have a special guest, but we'll go to Will first. How are you, man? Good to have you back in the booth next to me here.
Yeah, man, doing good. Another week, and what I'm going to do is just cut myself off now and save all this hot sauce for when we get into the meat and potatoes of this whole ordeal.
Yeah, we're recording on Monday night here. We have plenty of ranting and overreactions and perspectives that we're going to get to. And we have TJ Lasig, who ironically lives in the Philadelphia area. So he might have a lot to say about Monday night football as well. But TJ, it's awesome to have you back on. It was a blast doing the preview pod with you last season. And tell everybody a little bit about yourself if you're new to hearing TJ, and very busy at Roto Grinders and elsewhere. A lot of new entrepreneurial type stuff you've been up to on Twitter. I've been checking you out. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot going on right now. Middle of the Eagles game, Monday Night Football. Some hot takes being spat prior to the podcast recording. So excited to see some of those make their way to air. And yeah, for those of you that don't know me, Belucci and I did this show together last year and have been doing some PGA content at Roto Grinders. And then also doing some NFT stuff with my company called Own the Moment. And we actually have our own NFT football, fantasy football game there. So if anybody wants to check that out, it's called the Owners Club. It's a fun little twist on fantasy football.
Awesome stuff. Keep up the good work and check TJ out on Twitter. Always putting some good stuff out there. And great PGA mind does our premium value article. And we took a quick peek at the tournament coming up this week, and Sam Burns is the highest priced golfer. So good luck writing that value article, TJ.
It'll be a fun one. Always a blast when Sam Burns is apparently the best player in the field.
Yes, something like that. It's just been kind of a magical September for football. Crowds are back. There's energy. College football's been amazing. NFL, we've had some phenomenal finishes, coming right down to the Packers Niners on Sunday Night Football. Every other game has been brilliant. You know, Justin Tucker's doink heard around the world against Detroit. So there's just been so much fun stuff. It's good to have people back in the stands, and the environments have just been phenomenal. We got to talk about elephant in the room. That's our first segment. Big takeaways. Some things we're learning or maybe not learning from this previous week. And Chief has been raring to go after his bye week from last podcast. He had to mute himself. He was so hyped up. So I'm going to give the mic over to Chief. What is one of your biggest elephants in the room from this previous week of NFL action, Chief?
I mean, I think this is the biggest one that's probably a lot of noise, in my opinion. But the Kansas City Chiefs are under 500. What in the world is happening? They lost to the Baltimore Ravens, who barely beat the Detroit Lions this week. I mean, NFL, so much can happen. Now, look, do I think the Chiefs are going to be a bad team at the end of the season? No, I do not. But as it stands right now, you know, overreaction. Yes, this is an overreaction, but I'm still shocked. I don't think anyone expected the Chiefs to be 1-2, and I don't think they expected them to lose to Baltimore or the Chargers. I think this is a big deal. Now, clearly, you know, they're playing the Philadelphia Eagles this week. Ironically, and man, they're probably going to be out for blood. So at least I think I'm right. Yeah, the Chiefs are going to Philly. At this point, I might need to drive on up the PA and put a little money on Philly, because this, the Chiefs, man, let's go ahead and get that rolling. Traveling across the country, 1 p.m. game, going to get real interesting. I don't know, but anyway, that's one of my takeaways. And then secondly, just go ahead and pour one out for Christian McCaffrey for a few weeks, because he's out of there. Chuba Hubbard is going to be leading the backfield for the Panthers. And we're basically on our Texas tour right now, where we just kind of, you know, slid by Houston. And when I say slid by, I'm saying it wasn't the beatdown that I anticipated. We just kind of methodically won the game. A lot of that, I think, was trying to adjust to Christian McCaffrey being out. But I do think those are two big things. I've got one more I will throw in, and that is this. If the New York Giants did not beat the Atlanta Falcons, they might as well just hang up the cleats now. It's going to get real ugly for them. The division is a little better. They just can't buy a win. I mean, they had the Washington Redskins, Washington football team, excuse me. Sorry, folks. On the ropes, penalty, missed field goal, Washington kicks it, they lose. They had the Atlanta Falcons on the ropes. End of the game, they let Younghoe Koo just kick them out of the stadium. The New York Giants can't buy a win. This is a cursed franchise. I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. This is a cursed franchise. Dave Gettleman is not – he can't do anything with this team. I don't care who they get. They could go back and get Phil Simms for all they care. They're not winning any games. All right, I'm done. Back to you, my friend.
Well, I'm going to pass it over to TJ because I know he wants to talk some birds and maybe the Chiefs. You've made a lot of good points. And I'm sure a lot of people are picking up what you're putting down, man. But it's okay. The Chiefs went out and signed Josh Gordon. So I found like the Band-Aid GIF that you just put over the breaking water pipe that'll just fix everything, right? So, yeah, we'll just bring Josh Gordon, boom, stick it on the pipe. Everything's fine, right? Listen,
as if they didn't need another speedy receiver to take up more targets from Kelce and Tyreek. I mean, what? Gee whiz.
You know, you pull for Josh Gordon, right? Amazing talent. You know, just kept as Stephen A would say, smoking the reefer, I guess. And you know what? He, you know, I hope he is doing well and better, you know, hopefully he's in a better mental place because you just want him to succeed as a person, not only as a football player, you know, Andy Reid. I mean, and by the way, it sounds like Andy Reid is doing better after the medical scare he had after Sunday, but that's a pretty structured franchise to go to, all things considered. I mean, you know, they've had their issues, you know, with I'm not comparing these to same things, but like they believe in structure. I mean, they cut Kareem Hunt pretty abruptly after that situation a few years ago. And I know there's been some, you know, other players on the roster and things like that, but there's structure there. There's a lot worse teams Josh Gordon could end up on where there's no accountability or structure. I really thought, you know, New England is another perfect place, you know, leadership, just the tradition, you know, Belichick's a no-nonsense guy. Bill Belichick has revitalized a lot of careers and was kind of known for, you know, giving guys second and third opportunities. So I'm super happy for Josh Gordon. I don't know how he's going to fit in this offense or when he'll learn the playbook or when he'll see the field, but I don't think he's going to fix the rest of the Chiefs' problems, but it's a really great story. So good luck to Josh Gordon. So let's hear it, TJ. Got anything to piggyback off of what Chief brought up, and what else do you got?
Well, the Josh Gordon thing is actually an interesting segue because it's an ongoing joke with my friends that every time Josh Gordon comes up, I'm just like, come on. Everybody, like, it always becomes this big thing, and it's this big story of like, oh, Josh. And then it's sad, but I just feel like we all know how it always ends up ending. Like, when he's on the field, he is great. There's no doubt about that. Will he still be great now? I guess we'll find out soon. But, you know, for me, I just, you know, then everyone's like, oh, you got to add him in your season long leagues. And I just think I've had enough of the Josh Gordon thing. You know, it's the fool me once, fool me twice. I don't know how many times it's been at this point, but I do agree that there's probably not a better landing spot than in Kansas City. And I'll push back on Will's take on the, I mean, yeah, I am certainly shocked that they're 1-2, but like, they're still the Kansas City Chiefs. And they're still, if I had to take one team to win the Super Bowl as of today, they're still the team that I'm going with. They're still Patrick Mahomes when it comes down to it, playoff football, et cetera, et cetera. They're still the horses that I want to back there, but definitely not something I was expecting to have them two losses three weeks into the season. Be interesting to see that. I think in general, we're seeing a lot of kind of parity across the league. I think it's, you know, the old cliche, any given Sunday. I feel like we're really seeing that where, you know, with the exception of a couple of these teams that are just terrible at the bottom, But towards the top, I think there's a lot of different teams. The Rams are one that's really interesting to me. And I would say one of my kind of elephant in the rooms is just Cooper Kupp. My goodness. Like, is he going to be wide receiver one when this is all said and done? It's him and Stafford just seem to really be clicking. I don't have the target share numbers, but I know it's absolutely insane. And yeah, I think Cooper Kupp is someone that is going to just be a staple in lineups, and we'll probably see him start to creep up towards the most expensive prices we've ever seen for Kupp in terms of daily fantasy.
Hot take here. Cooper Kupp was always wide receiver one in this offense.
I was saying wide receiver one in fantasy. I'm going hot takes.
Yeah.
You know, that would be.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think he's definitely in the mix.
He's right there right now.
Well, right now he definitely is, but it's like, obviously he was not going near wide receiver one in preseason drafts, but yeah, he's just a beast right now. And Stafford seems to really be clicking in that offense.
Well, Will, I'll pass this over to you. There's a million things we could talk about, but speaking of the Rams, how concerned on you on a scale of 1 for 10 are you with the back end of this Tampa Bay defense? We saw Dak absolutely light them up in the opening week. I mean, Stafford, Kupp, I mean, geez, that was a signature win. I mean, that was a game that Stafford really needed on his resume. And, you know, that was a kind of prove you're for real game. They look pretty freaking good. 340 plus yards and 4 scores for Matt Stafford. So what's your, like, are you worried about this Tampa Bay defense in the secondary?
I'm not. Believe it or not, they weren't that good at the beginning of the year last year. I think people forget that. I think we just remember like their last 5 to 6 games ending the season and kind of clicking. And, you know, we're calling them a great defense. But I think the same thing kind of happened last year where they kind of had to figure it out. And eventually they figured it out and, you know, got their mojo going with Todd Bowles. And then all of a sudden they were like a shutdown defense. But, you know, beginning of the season last year, similar thing. So I'm not really worried. I hope they continue to lose. Listen, my Panthers in the NFC South. Let's keep rolling. What if I told you we were 3-0 and leading the division? You know, that went over the Saints and Jameis. And so I'm very excited now. You know, will that continue this week when we play Dallas? We'll see. Speaking of that, because I know we're not really talking DFS, so welcome to the pod, folks. We'll get there. Looking over the landscape of the league, the Rams are 3-0, the Cardinals are 3-0, and then you hop over to and the Panthers are 3-0. But then you hop to the AFC, and then it gets – you got some head scratchers here because the Raiders and the Broncos are 3-2, the Chargers are 2-1. And newsflash, folks, the Broncos and the Raiders may beat the Chiefs again. I know we don't think this can happen, but I'm telling you, I don't think they fixed these offensive line problems yet. Like, if you just watch the game, like, Patrick Mahomes is running around a lot more than he should. And I think that's contributing to some of these losses. They just can't get going. Like, he's making some of these errant throws. You know, I saw him throw one the other day. He looked like Jameis Winston. Now, clearly, Patrick Mahomes is not Jameis Winston. But I'm telling you, on that pick, I was like, what is he doing? He just kind of threw it out there, and the guy just ran under. It was like, thanks, Pat. Going the other way. And so I'm very concerned for the Chiefs. Like, clearly, fantastic team. And, yeah, I'm not buying into the Raiders yet, but the Broncos have the defense. They don't have all the weapons, but defense can win late in the season. So I'm actually a little scared of Chiefs. Like, right now, I'd be hammering Chiefs not making it to the AFC Championship if I could get those odds somewhere. Like, I'd start hammering that right now.
Will's DMs are open if anybody wants a side wager, apparently. But those are interesting odds if we could find them somewhere. I got a question for you about the Carolina Panthers, and then we'll hop on back over there to TJ, especially after watching last week's game. What is Robbie Anderson's actual role in this offense? Target market share, week 1, 9%, week 2, 16%, week 3, 6%. I thought for sure when McCaffrey was out, we'd see some more Anderson in that game. Now I know it's just one game and there's a lot of variance and so much goes into one game. Is he, you know, even the air yards last game, 2% of the air yard market share. Is obviously DJ Moore is getting peppered last week and throughout the whole season so far. So is Anderson's role going to grow, or is he more of a boomer bust option at this point, Chief? I think you probably know the Panthers better than most people right now.
Yeah, at least for right now, I would say he's a boomer bust option. You know, the numbers don't lie. There has been a quarterback change, and I think we've got to adjust for that. Teddy Bridgewater's not there, right? You know, and so I think we've got to make that adjustment. And a lot of it, too, I think, is just route concept. Like, I did see him drop one. But if you look at kind of the route concepts that they've been running, even last week when Houston was kind of playing more so two deep coverage, they just kept running square ends for DJ Moore, and he was just open. Now I saw, and then they're running Robbie Anderson on like a shallow cross underneath just to kind of occupy space. They stick him outside. Like, it's just, I think it's quarterback change, route concept. I think they're trying to maybe cater to Darnold's skill set. And while I know Robbie Anderson can really, you know, he can take the top off of the roof, that's just not what they want Sam Darnold doing most of the game. I think they want him in more intermediate throws, and that's DJ Moore's specialty. And that's what I think is happening. When DJ Moore is open, I mean, all season really, he's open like 70% of the time. It's crazy, which is why he gets so many targets. You look, it's like, oh, he's open again. Just throw it to him. You know, and Robbie's running these weird, you know, it's just weird route run. The route concepts for him just aren't what they were, I don't think. And so that's where I am with the Panthers. But we'll see. McCaffrey's gone, you know, so they don't have him to roll him out of the backfield and occupy linebackers, you know, like they were doing. And we'll have to see what they do with Chuba Hubbard, and maybe that'll open it up. But what you have to do with a guy like Robbie is maybe you don't play him in your main build, but eventually he's going to have one of those four catch, 150-yard, two touchdown games. And he's a guy you just have to keep in your build, because he's going to hit 4,500 and they're going to say, and then he's going to pop off and everybody's going to say, God, I've been playing you for 5 weeks. And the week I don't play you, you go off. Come on. You guys know how we do this.
DJ, let me hear it. What do you got about the Panthers? And give me another elephant in the room.
Yeah, the Panthers, it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, without McCaffrey. Major, major hit to their offense. Another team, the same way it's surprising to see the Chiefs at 1-2, it's surprising to see the Panthers at 3-0, but Darnold seems to be doing much better in this offense. Yeah, I think with Robbie Anderson, he's always been much more of that boom or bust kind of guy, where he'll have games that are complete duds, and then, like was just said, can go off for the big plays, 100-plus and touchdowns. But We may not see that in this offense with Darnold, but I do think that he's still someone in MME-type large field tournaments where we still want to be looking his direction, just because we know he has that ceiling that not a lot of people have there. So, yeah, we'll have to see kind of what the target. My guess is that DJ Moore might just get even more targets flowing his way with McCaffrey gone. And when McCaffrey was out in past years, it was always Mike Davis is CMC light. So I'm curious if are we going to see the same thing with Chuba Hubbard, or are we going to I'm just curious what that role is going to look like and how that is going to be the next. How long is McCaffrey out for? Do we have a timetable yet?
He's not on the IR. I would guess at least 2 to 3 weeks minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would guess. And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think they're going to turn Chuba Hubbard into Christian McCaffrey.
I don't think you. Oh well, you definitely. I mean, yeah, I think that at least Mike Davis was like somewhat good. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their offense looks like.
I think Chuba's good now, but I think it's a different skill set. Like, you know, the guy was over 2,000 in college. He's got some skill, but I don't think it's. They're not going to give him 5-6 targets a game. Probably like 2.
Makes sense.
So one of my elephants in the room is the Washington football team might be defensively a lot worse than what the industry was kind of the label they were giving them, I suppose. Not only the fact that Josh Allen had his way, did whatever he wanted. It did not matter. They made Daniel Jones look like a great play against Atlanta this week as well. Like, coming off of that game against Washington, the primetime game, Daniel Jones had a big run, made some good throws, looked like he was in control of the offense, and he sure as hell didn't look like he was in control of anything against Atlanta. So I'm maybe starting to attack this Washington football team a little more. And some of my Bills, just with how things are playing out. So I'm a little concerned there. I don't know. Of course, just some terrible luck off the rip with Fitzpatrick and, Heinicke having trouble sustaining some drives. And that game could have been even uglier if Gibson didn't have his splash play in that one. So that's kind of where I'm at. TJ, any other big takeaways from the previous week here?
I'll give a little bit of a selfish one here, and it's related to my Eagles, but, the jury's still out on Jalen Hurts and whether or not he can be the guy, but Carson Wentz is definitely not the guy. So we at least know that much. And, I'm jaded by my Philly sports, but it does always seem like in the past that people have left our teams and then gone on to have great success elsewhere. And, makes me sleep a little bit better at night knowing that that is just not going to happen with Wentz. I mean, he's just as bad as he was the last year with the Eagles. So that's
well,
that's
I need Wentz to have a couple big games. I got some cards I got to unload.
Oh no. Not a good time to own some
we won't
Wentz
get
cards.
Into that. Yeah, we won't get into that discussion, but hopefully he'll have a couple, 200-300 yard passing games. And, Carson Wentz is way out of my portfolio.
Chief, we probably don't have enough time in the world to talk about quarterbacks. We were talking a little bit pre-show and it got kind of heated. I don't know. Do you want to talk about Ben Roethlisberger? Is that the biggest elephant in the room here?
Listen,
are we firing up the engine right now?
Listen, folks, love Big Ben. Heck of a career. But he's not Tom Brady, okay? And he's definitely not Drew Brees. And Drew Brees knew last season that he needed to get out of town while he still had some dignity. And Ben needs to do the same thing. Like, seriously, look, I'm not a Steelers fan. My dad's a Steelers fan. And they're just certain teams, like Philly, the Steelers, Dallas, the original teams. They don't care that you've been there 20 years. And I think Ben's been there, 17, 18, I think. Is this his 18th season or 17th? It's one or the other, I think. And I love Ben, but he's got to go. I think Ben is costing this team games. And I mean that. I legit think Ben Roethlisberger is costing this team games. And so when you're a veteran quarterback is costing you games, you better have one or the other. You better have a really good defense to where he can manufacture some wins late in the game and just kind of get the ball down the field and so they can kick a field goal. Or he better be good enough to overcome the defensive woes. It's got to be one or the other. It can't be, in Tom Brady's case, he was kind of able to do a little bit of both. Drew Brees wasn't able to get it done, as you can see at the end of his career. And it's the same thing. The Steelers defense is not elite. And Ben can't, he can't cover it up. So I think it's time for Ben to pass the torch. I'm not saying it's Mason Rudolph, and I'm definitely not saying it's Dwayne Haskins, but they've got to figure this out fast because, they're going to be on their way to an under 500 season because there's no way they're going to beat Baltimore, and Baltimore is not even playing well yet. They're not going to beat Baltimore, and they're definitely not beating Cleveland right now. So their season is pretty much over. In my opinion, they're toast. Like, we want to talk about guys being dusty. Ben Roethlisberger is dusty. Like, he's in the coffin as we speak.
Are they the worst team in that division right now?
Oh, it's funny you should ask. I've got it pulled up.
It's pretty funny.
They just lost to the Bengals. They're not going to beat the Ravens, and they're definitely not beating the Browns. They're 1-2. And who do they play this week? Let's find out, shall we?
Green Bay.
Do you think they're going to beat Green Bay? They're 1-3 at the end of the week. Just go ahead and give them 1-3 right
now. Well, not only that, but the offensive line magically didn't get better just because they got Najee Harris and his 100% snap share from week one that we all know so very well. He's averaging 3 yards a carry. Nothing's going offensively for that team. No Deontay Johnson right now.
Juju was out. Rib injury. Wasn't it a rib?
Yeah, something like that. What's your panic meter at with the Steelers, TJ?
Oh, there's no panic. They're done.
Yeah, I think it's time for Ben to hang him up. I think it was time before this season. Never should have, like you said, never should have rolled himself out there. Gotta see it coming before it gets too out of hand, and it's just out of hand at this point. And yeah, heading into Lambeau is a tough spot for them. And I'll tell you what, Aaron Rodgers did not look super washed. I thought that game was super fun to watch last night, and it was good to see a little fire in Rodgers after the win too. So I think, and obviously that was the major story all off season, and a bunch of drama going on there. But looks like Rodgers is, you know, obviously not prime Rodgers, but I think they could make some noise throughout the entire season here, and definitely expect Green Bay to be around come playoff time.
Listen,
can I squeeze in one more thing, Luch? I'm so sorry.
Of course you can.
Listen, I missed last week, man. So I
this
got,
is
I
your podcast too, Chief.
Store it up here. If you take Aaron Rodgers and send him to Pittsburgh right now, they're probably leading the division.
Yeah, quarterbacks are important.
You get what I'm saying?
You send him to Philadelphia and they're leading the division.
No, seriously. This is real talk.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Quez Watkins is the modern day MVS, baby. Like,
seriously. Like,
Devontae Smith could be his Alan Lazard. Everything would be great.
Yeah. I mean, no. Well, Devontae would probably be. He'd probably be Adams, actually. But seriously, though, man, you know, I like I said, this isn't a bash on Ben Session. This is a. Do you want to win games? And if so, Ben isn't the answer. Like it's just time, man. It was ugly Sunday, and it was ugly week one. Like it's been ugly the whole time.
Speaking of Aaron Rodgers, that game, TJ, that last drive, the way he dropped back to pass on two of those huge throws, stood there. The heat's coming. It looked like he didn't give a shit. He was holding the ball like a loaf of bread by his waist, just standing there. And without stepping up in the pocket, just uncorked two bombs. Yeah. That was like the baddest. That confirmed, as if it wasn't ready, that he's a bad man. Like maybe the baddest man in the league. That had serious swag to it. So talk to me about that sequence real quick. And where do you, like, how do you gauge the Niners? And are you calling for Trey Lance yet?
Yeah, I think Rodgers just has all the swag. I mean, from that last drive all the way through to the post-game interviews, like, the man's just got swag. He doesn't cut his hair anymore. He looks like he doesn't shower anymore. Like, he just does whatever he wants. He's just a man out there that literally is just going to do whatever he wants. And sometimes the most dangerous man is the one that literally does not give a single shit about anything. And that's just what he looks like out there. It's like, hey, I'm out here playing because I guess why not? And sometimes that can just be lead to some good results. So love to see that. And then, you know, the way he just looks for Adams on just about every play, especially if it's an important play, you need something. They essentially called that timeout when Adams had the missile play, just so that they could get him back into the game. And then always look in that direction. But
he went through quote unquote concussion protocol.
Yeah. In 30 seconds.
Jeez, man. Oh, man.
And yeah.
You see okay? I'm holding up two fingers. All right. You're all right. Get back up.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Come in here just so that we can say that we put you through the protocol because we need you now. And yeah, I mean, I think the Trey Lance thing is interesting because, yeah, we're talking about Ben and how he's washed. But then on the other side of things, the rookie quarterbacks are having a tough start to the season across the board. Saw that I started Justin Fields in my season long league this week. So that did not go well, but, yeah, I think it's, and I guess everyone thinks this, but it's a matter of when, not if we start to see Trey Lance in there for the Niners. And, I don't know. I would say by week five or six, is that what we're expecting? Like what's the,
Not if they're winning games. I don't see it.
That's the thing. It's almost like they're – it's almost killing them that they're going to win games. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Jimmy G's not awful. It's not awful. It's an interesting spot. They've got two better options than a lot of teams have for one single option.
Chief, do you want any microphone time for Justin Fields? I'll give you the opportunity.
Oh, sure, sure. Because I mean, I like Justin Fields.
I love me too. So
I like Trevor Lawrence. I like Mac Jones. But here's the thing: I don't ever overvalue rookie quarterbacks. I you know why? Because they need time, right? Like they're not running backs. You know, most of the time, if you look, and most NFL analysts will tell you, typically running backs come into the league and they're kind of ready to go. right? It's an easier transition. Going from high school to college is elite at quarterback. Because look, man, you guys have watched high school football. I mean, when a guy is elite, he's going to destroy a team that's just, you know, has average talent around it. And the same thing in college. When you go to Alabama or you go to Ohio State and, you know, you've got all these other five-star recruits around you, you're typically going to have a pretty easy time in college. When you come to the NFL, yeah, there's some bad teams, but in terms of talent, most people are on an even playing field. It comes down to coaching and culture and stuff like that. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at the Rams, they had about the same team before. He was the coordinator for Washington at the time, but he comes in and he brings a different swag and he brings a different culture, and suddenly they start winning. And then they realize, hey, we need a quarterback change. You get Matthew Stafford out of Detroit, and suddenly he looks like an MVP now. Like, right? Like, culture and coaching matters in the NFL because everybody has talent. Everybody. You know? So my point is, I think rookie quarterbacks are always overvalued. And so I think they all need time, some longer than others, right? Some and longer than others.
And it's a shame because some of them will never get that opportunity.
No,
you think about this all the time. You get drafted into a terrible scheme and you have your 3 years and you're done. We just talked about Mitch Trubisky. Will he ever get another chance? Is it Matt Nagy's fault? Where's the finger pointing? There was a lot of good material on the World Wide Web about Matt Nagy and people giving their takes, even on ESPN. Like, they were going in.
Yeah.
So it's a shame.
Or any of the Browns' former quarterbacks. I mean, they had like 20.
TJ, do you have a lean on what coach gets fired first this year?
Oh.
If you have $20 in your pocket, who do you put it on? Is it Matt Nagy? Is it Dan Campbell already? Football guy Dan Campbell? Is it?
I could definitely see Nagy being very much on the hot seat, especially if it's, you know, figured out with Fields. Like, they'll obviously, if they need a scapegoat, it certainly can't be Fields. So it therefore would have to be Nagy. I think that's a pretty solid take right there.
Is Joe Judge on the hot seat, Chief?
They're 0-3.
He's trying to create that culture, but he literally made a couple of guys quit. Like we're in middle school. I don't know.
Yeah, it's.
I don't know what culture. Like, I don't know if guys buy into that or not.
That's the line for this pod when we put it up. Food for Thought podcast. Coach literally makes a guy quit like we're in middle school. Like that's the line. Here's what I would say in all seriousness. And this is like a sneaky one because I don't think it's really on the radar per se. It's not one that's on the radar. However, if the Seahawks don't win this year, you got to think we're getting close to the end of peak. I'm telling you. Because how many years has he gone now where it let Russ cook and they just don't get it done, right? Like at some point, they got to say, hey, man, it's been real, but we got to do something different. That's like a sneaky one for me because they're in a tough division this year. They're not better than the Rams, and they might not be better than the Cardinals, and they might not be better than the 49ers. Like, seriously, just think about it.
I know.
He might be on the hot seat at the end of the season.
We're still only three games into the season, which is a scary thought. If my Titans, don't come all the way back, we might not be having this discussion right now. Speaking of culture change, thank you, John Robinson, for stealing Ryan Tannehill. Got away from Adam Gase and now he's a Pro Bowler. The Adam Gase memes this week were top-notch, too, with his terrible track record, terrible Gase, culture. I mean, good Lord.
Tannehill, Darnold. Look, I mean, I know it's only three games, but I'm telling you, Darnold looks like a different
quarterback. We are reaping the benefits of Adam Gase's, you know, outcast. But it's amazing. That's a great segue, the Pete Carroll thing. I want a recipe for success looking ahead here. You can still throw on the Seattle Seahawks. You have Ryan Tannehill going for 350. Last week, Kirk Cousins, who I had in one of my 153 max lineups with Justin Jefferson and DK Metcalf and Osborne. So I didn't get there. But moral of the story is Kirk Cousins fantastic against Seattle. And they have the San Francisco 49ers this week, who we just talked about. And that is extremely interesting to me because you can throw on Seattle. And I guess you could do it. I guess you could run on Seattle too, but you can definitely have some splash plays. And I'm looking at this game and we finally saw Brandon Ayuk, and Keith and I talked about it on the Sunday night show. We said, who's to say he's not going to play 85-90% of the snaps. Finally, whatever the problem was with Shanahan was magically gone. He played 85% of the snaps or a little bit more, and he's 5K against the Seattle team. So that was the perfect segue, boys. So that is my first recipe for success. I am targeting a pass catcher probably as a one-off. I'm probably not using Jimmy G this week in some of my tournament builds here. So that's my first piece of the recipe for success. So Chief, I know you had a bye week and you're itching to go here. So give me one of your recipe for successes this week.
Yeah, I mean, no secret here. I'm just going to keep attacking the Jacksonville Jaguars until I can. This is not a good football team right now. Bengals are, you know, I mean, I know that's a Thursday night game, but you know, this feels like loaded up for the Bengals. Just had a big win against the Steelers, even though the Steelers aren't great, good division win. So I don't think Jacksonville is a great team. So I'm out. Last but not least, I'm going to give you two because that's the Thursday night game. And this one isn't sneaky, but I do think it could get overlooked. And that's the Bills and Texans. We just saw Josh Allen have his I'm not dead coming out party. I mean, just distributing the ball all around the field, right?
I'm not dead.
And here we go. Stephon Diggs hasn't had a big game yet. I think this is Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs week personally. It feels like, and I'm not saying he's going to have 10 catches. I'm saying maybe 6 for 120 and 2. Like, you know what I'm saying? Emmanuel Sanders had it last week. I mean, heck, half the team had like 12 catches. That's an exaggeration. But I mean, Cole Beasley, Emmanuel, they all had at least 5 catches, I think, in that game. So I think this is going to be a big deal. They didn't take their foot off the gas. They just kept running it, kept pushing the ball down the field. If you don't think they're going to do the same thing against this Houston team, they'll probably score 28 points in the first half. Or close to it. So I like the Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs combination. I think it's going to be a big, big week for these guys. I mean, we saw what DJ Moore was able to get done. They're going to be in two deep coverage. That's the Lovie Smith special the whole game. Just sit in two deep coverage and let you keep throwing it, bend but don't break, and they're going to break because Stephon Diggs is going to kill them. All right.
You're shaking your head over there, TJ. We got to get
the. I love that. You know, I love my Josh Allen and the Bills. That's, you know, last year that was always the thing. Josh Allen, MVP. And they're an interesting team because typically you look at, what are they, 17-point favorites, and you think that they're just going to run it. But the Bills like to air it out as much as they can. Like you said, they spread the ball around. There are a lot of different people there. So definitely love Buffalo. Is there anyone on Houston that you could even run? Running yes. Allen stack back with yes. Like you just run it back and let them pick up the garbage time points. Who's your guy?
Let me give you this nugget, since that's why we like a little chicken nugget, because Chief always drops the nuggets. That's why it's the food for thought. Brandon Cooks is your current leader in air yard market share in the National Football League, and it didn't matter who's throwing the football. There was nobody else on the field for Davis Mills. It was just Brandon Cooks running 8-yard outs, and when it's PPR scoring, those points are adding up. So I am totally fine with running Brandon Cooks back in that game with that spread. You know, he'll be in there for 3.5 quarters at least until it gets super ugly. That's my thought there. Brandon Cooks?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great option. A little Allen stack or double stack. Cooks on the run back.
Yeah, Brandon Cooks is 6,400. Not too expensive, put up over 20 in all three games. He pretty much just got there on. He did score a touchdown against Cleveland, but he's just getting there on volume. Like he had 14 targets, 11 targets with an extreme backup quarterback. Like it just doesn't matter.
The game script's going to be there. They're going to stink more times than they're not going to stink. TJ, I'll ask you for your recipe for success in just a second. A quick shout out to Keith Eister, who I did the Sunday Night Showdown show with. He is not on Twitter, and I kind of make fun of him about it. He's the most modest tout because he's just not on Twitter. But he, I think he came in third in one of the smaller 153 maxes, and he backdoor stacked the Bills. He went Josh Allen, Cole Beasley, and Sanders, I think. So cool way to be even extra unique there. So shout out to him. And yeah, let me hear your one of your recipes for success, TJ.
Yeah, I'm looking at the games for this week right now, and I'm also watching Dallas and the Eagles, and I think that this Dallas-Carolina game definitely stands out to me. 50 over-under, so it's, you know, kind of sitting in that fourth or fifth game on the board range, which sometimes is a game that can go overlooked. And, I mean, it just seems like – and it seems like two offenses where you get condensed target shares, right? You've got Cooper and Lamb on the Dallas side, stack them up with Dak. If you want to throw Zeke in there as well, got a good option there. And then on the Carolina side, I mean, I really think that with McCaffrey out, DJ Moore becomes even more of a super high floor, high ceiling type of play. If you want to throw the Robbie Anderson in a larger field tournament, I think that could work as well. I just like Dallas as a team to stack against because they are stack with because of the condensed target share. Big fan of Dak, even though it pains me because I'm an Eagles fan, but you got to take the bias out. And yeah, that's definitely the first game that caught my eye as I was looking through this week.
I tell you, get ready for Robbie Anderson to go off for 102.
Yeah.
Go ahead and pencil it in now and save yourself the agony of feeling frustrated later because you played him the week two against Houston and he did nothing.
102 on
5,100.
Like
5,100, Robbie Anderson, 6,600 for DJ Moore. So, I mean, 5,100 is pretty cheap for someone that has the ceiling that we know that he has. And that's the other thing I like about stacking up this game is that it's everyone's like reasonably priced. So it gives you kind of a nice balanced build. You're probably not going to be able to jam in any of the super high price guys with that lineup, but I think you can make it work for sure.
You know what? I lied to you, man. I don't listen. I practice honesty and I lied to you, TJ, and I'm so sorry. I just realized, and this is something I didn't know, which is so bad, right? Chuba Hubbard had 5 targets in that game against Houston.
Oh,
that's a big deal. I mean, if he's going to get 5, and I mean, he got 11 carries after McCaffrey went out, so he probably gets 13 to 15 carries, 5 targets. We're probably going to play him. We're probably going to have to play him.
So is that going to become like a chalky play by the time this is all said and done?
I don't think so. It's not like he's 59.
Yeah, exactly.
If he was 4K,
but
59, they've got him priced up enough to make you think. And so what I'm going to do now, I'm just going to look in that range. Like you've got David Montgomery, who's going to be on the field a lot. Kareem Hunt, 6K. Chuba Hubbard. Gibson, 61 against Atlanta. He's going to be more popular.
Here we
Swift
go.
At 62.
Hold on. Don't steal my thunder just yet. Chicago. Alexander Mattison, what are we doing with him?
Yeah, I mean.
Cleveland? You go from Seattle to Cleveland, though, but 26 carries and 8 targets? What are we doing with him, guys? I want to hear both your takes on Mattison this week.
I mean, if he's going to get the volume, you have to consider him at that price. I mean, he's the guy.
And, if Cook is out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If Cook is out. But, yeah, I don't think Hubbard's going to be popular because of the price range he's in.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire had a wake-up game at 4,800, and everybody thought he was dead, and we're like, hey, he's on the field like 80%. Like, eventually the touchdown variance is going to come, and he had a fumble. If he didn't lose the fumble, he's like 22 fantasy points.
And he's got and he's got the Eagles, who we just watched get gashed. So
yeah, rough game. But so TJ, I'm sorry, man. Chuba Hubbard's in play. If he's going to get 5 targets and 15 carries, you have to play him against this team because trust me, you know the other thing is the Carolina defense has been fairly good this year. A lot of it's because they blitzed a lot. So we're going to have to just figure out, is Dak going to burn us and just throw the ball where the guys aren't? Like, if he does, then it's a totally different game. If they don't pick up on these blitzes, we're going to have a chance to get in there. So we'll see.
I think Mattison is going to be a great option to look at if Dalvin is out again. I mean, he basically gets the same workload that that Cook gets, if not almost more, because he's not there to take away any carries from Cook. And like, obviously, if Dalvin Cook was 6,600, it would be the biggest free square of all time, home against Cleveland. So I'm all about the Madison train. I mean, I think that, you know, even going back to last season, he's someone who, whenever Dalvin is out, definitely a good option, has a great workload, dual threat, involved in the passing game. So I imagine that he'll be chalky again. We also have Zeke right below him at 6,500, which is kind of interesting. So yeah, it seems like there's some options at the running back position, but Madison definitely stands out as just being a slam dunk play in that range. What do you, obviously you have takes on him. What do you think, Luch?
I need to see some ownership projections, but you know, I think opportunity trumps matchup in any fantasy sport, really. And he was a super catalyst of that offense. Like, that offense didn't miss a beat without Dalvin Cook. Like, it was just insert, plug and play, running multiple types of screens for him, you know, complex screens, not just like, you know, drop back and throw, like roll out, fake one way and go the other. So yeah, I'm interested too. Another guy I like at running back, and you know, I guess this is probably going to be one of my recipes for success. And I'm wondering, with all these appetizing prices on some of these guys in the 6K range we talked about, maybe Nick Chubb will kind of go under-owned. I'm thinking here at 7K. I like the matchup, and I think it's a really nice get-right bounce-back spot here. And I think we're going to see a ton of Gibson ownership. And like you said, Hubbard will definitely, and Madison with the opportunities, and Edwards-Helaire, 5,400. So I think Chubb might kind of be one of the left-out guys, because obviously up top you have Henry, and you have Kamara against the lowly Giants. So Chubb is a very interesting piece for me this week. Recipe for success. Give me another one.
Because we're on running back, I mean, you know, we've talked about this guy since after week one, and Ben is in trouble, and I suspect he's going to start this week. Did anyone realize Najee Harris had 19 targets last week?
19.
What is Ben's A dot? We have to look it up. Is it literally just line of scrimmage? Is that where the ball's going?
I'm not exaggerating, by the way. This is not an exaggeration. Najee Harris had 19 targets, 14 catches for 102 yards. And it's because everybody's done. Like, Juju was out, Deontay's out. And so they've got James Washington. Ray McLeod was out there catching passes. I'm serious. 19 targets, 14 receptions, and now they're going to Green Bay, where they're absolutely going to be behind in this game. I didn't want to get on the Najee train, but after this, and it's going to be similar this week if Deontay and Juju are out again. Like, you got to think he's going to get at least 10, right? Like, you're not going to get 19 targets, but he's probably going to get at least 10, which is probably like 7 or 8 catches at a minimum for probably 30, 40 yards. So, I mean, you got a guy at 6,800 before he even takes one rushing attempt, he's probably starting with a floor of like 12.
I just can't look at these numbers.
No, seriously, like these are facts.
I just can't look at these numbers with a straight face. I'm trying to keep it together here. And I know, like, Najee Harris receiving back, his A dot last week was 0.05. I'm serious. His target market share, I mean, his air yard market share was 0.3. So Ben is just immobile and just saying, hot potato, here's the ball, Najee. So,
well,
I don't know.
That's TJ, insane.
I got to hear your Najee Harris thoughts, right?
I mean, that's 19 targets is crazy. I did not know that. It's almost like the Le'Veon Bell role from back in the day. Of just,
by the way, Chase Claypool had 15, just to give you a measuring stick. Like, just to give you a measuring stick, Claypool had 15 targets.
Crazy. Yeah, I think on DraftKings, anytime you have a running back that's getting that many targets, it's just guaranteed. Point here, point there, and then it adds up, gives them such a high floor. The ceiling's still not great just because the offense is – just because they're bad. But, you know, I think if you're looking for a floor play, definitely something that you can go with there. And I'm certainly not playing any Ben, but you could even do like a Rodgers, Davante Adams, and then have Najee Harris as the bring back and just rack up those PPR points. But man, yeah, the workload's been there, but the efficiency is going to be a problem all year long, I would think. And if you're not going to get, you can't get 19 targets on any kind of consistent basis, right?
But that's what I'm saying.
Or can you?
I got to think with this team, and if the guys are out again, because Deontay's definitely not going to be back this week. I think he gets at least 10. Like, that's what I have in my head. And only because they're probably going to be down, I would say, at least 17 points at some point in this game. That's what I'm saying. If he gets 10 targets and he catches 7 to 8 balls, I'm thinking he can squeeze 30 or 40 yards out of that. I know his ADOT's low, right? But he can still get a few yards after the catch. I mean, if he had 8 catches and he's at 3 yards a pop, that's 24 yards. If he's at 8 catches, 40 yards, that's 12 points. Not even including his rushing attempts.
Madness.
I'm just hoping for the offense's sake that they take this week and try to scheme up something else. But they just might not be able – that might be out the window halfway through the first quarter if they're down 14-0, right? That is certainly interesting. And Harris is priced up to 8,200 on FanDuel. Good Lord, Cordell Patterson, 6K on FanDuel. Huh. Cordell Patterson, you know, the names we're talking about in week 3 here that are like somewhat fantasy relevant are pretty crazy. Chief, what else you got for me? We got about 10-15 minutes left in the pod here. Give me something else.
Last thing, I'm just committed to this guy the whole season until he becomes a slate breaker. And it's another running back. I know this seems crazy, but believe it or not, Mike Davis is still getting serious volume. I know it feels like him and Cordero on even split. It's not quite even. He had 12 carries last week for 50 yards and 4 catches for 20 yards. Now, he's another one of those low ADOT guys. He's had 6 targets in week 1, 7 in week 2, 4 in week 3. The targets are going to be there, and the carries are going to be there. On the week where he scores 2 touchdowns, he's going for 25. So at 5,100, I will say – I'm just going to keep playing Mike Davis at this point until the production catches up. It's kind of the Clyde Edwards-Helaire scenario where he's on the field, the production is going to come. Like, I'm not going to be results-oriented with Mike Davis. I'm going to be analytically oriented and say, okay, if this guy's going to be on the field getting this type of attention, then eventually the fantasy points are going to come. At 5,100, I'm absolutely going to be back on the Mike Davis train.
Okay. Everybody, it was high on him entering the season. You know, the projections like him for a price thing, typically from week to week when you're running some optos just for the hell of it and just see what it spits out. So, yeah. I mean, TJ, got anything else? I got maybe one or two more things, but if you want to bounce something off of me, go for it.
Yeah, I've got one. And it's actually something that we talked about a decent amount last year with regards to tight end. And I think it's more of a general thing, but I think a great strategy in tournaments is that you're either playing Travis Kelce or you're throwing in a tight end with whatever your game stack is. Like, I think as a general rule of thumb, that's a pretty good idea. And it doesn't have to be anywhere near a core piece of your lineup. So we talked about a Josh Allen stack earlier, right? So you could go Allen, you can even go Allen, Diggs, and Sanders or Beasley, and then also put in Dawson Knox as, you know, kind of the super stack there, right? Or even put in, you know, whoever, what are you got, Akins on the other side. Like, I just think that in general, A, that the tight end scoring is just so low across the board, and B, it's so unpredictable that adding in that correlation with the tight end, I think is generally a good spot, and also just kind of avoiding any mega chalk tight end that comes to be. And then Travis Kelce is, of course, just the exception. But I mean, he's 8,100. It's crazy the prices that he's getting to. And like, is he worth it? A lot of the time, yes. But it really crushes the rest of your lineup and limits what you can do there. So that's my general take, is that include the tight end in a part of your game stack. It doesn't have to be in every single lineup, but I think generally that's a good strategy tip.
That's a really good point. And this might be a good Kyle Pitts get right finally spot. Potentially this week, guys got all the talent in the world. Two more things.
Can I plug in off TJ here?
Plug it in. Let's go.
I will say this. Travis Kelce is the GPP play every week.
Yeah, because no one ever plays him because of just what I said. Right. Is he a good play? Great. Oh, but I can't afford him. But then, like.
Right. But here's the thing.
He gets 20 every game at least.
Right. At least. And he hasn't even hit a slate-breaking point yet. And his fantasy totals on DK, 25, 26, and 20. And he's actually a better play than Tyreek every week.
I don't want to pour. Yes. I don't want to pour a 10-pound bag of salt and open wounds here. But, you know, the ceiling game, it's it might be in the cards this week with the birds. And
did you see Dalton Schultz this
That's what
this
I'm
week?
Saying. I thought it was Kelce. I thought Schultz was Kelce out there.
I will
you can that. Run it back with Quez Watkins.
Look, I mean – I've made so much money with Travis Kelce just playing him at tight end because you can always find a 4K wide receiver to get there.
Yeah.
Like Noah Font, Kyle Pitts, we're like, oh yeah, these guys are going to get there, and they score 8 points.
Yeah.
T.J. Hockenson, oh man, targets are through the roof this year, and he scores 3 points. That should have been the elephant in the room. What happened to T.J. Hockenson's targets? But neither here nor there. Neither here nor there. So I really think, TJ, and you, I know you're onto it. The solution is, if you don't want crappy tight end play, play Travis Kelce every week and just accept the 1 or 2, 12 to 15 points he's going to give you, because most of the time he's going over 20. And if you look at any projection system, he's projected higher than pretty much every wide receiver every week. But we just don't want to play him at tight end because, you know, it feels really bad. But with all these cheap receivers and cheap running backs, like, it's worth it to just pay up for them and take your 25 points, because you might be able to get 25 points out of your 5K running back this week.
And more times than not, it makes your build different right off the bat than most of the field pick, because, you know, look at the ownership projections. Like you guys said, a lot of people don't want to pay up, and being different and unique and just in terms of, you know, who you need to fail every week at, you know, other positions to take down a tournament, it, you know, This could be setting up to be a good bounce back spot for Kansas City. I did want to mention two other things. I know we were just trashing the Giants in the beginning of the show, but like, we have to keep an eye on this injury report heading into this week. I mean, it's the Saints, and I don't know how to read the Saints this year, but anytime, you know, with their issues, there could be some nice short fields for the Giants too. And this is my last week for the Giants. Okay. Listen, they were Shepard got hurt, killed a lot of people in GPP. Slayton got hurt. You know, things were not good. Kenny Golladay still only played 69% of the snaps, and he was by far the alpha receiver on that roster on paper. So, you know, there were some reports lingering pre-lock that maybe he was going to be limited. But I think, you know, he is in that little 5K range too. And, you know, he might just have to man up if he wants to give any glimmer of hope to save the season or maybe save Joe Judge's job. But the other thing is, you know, Saquon was quietly pretty good, pretty popular piece in the builds, but, you know, had a decent amount of work, 16 carries. That offensive line still not great. He scored, but he had 7 targets. So they finally were able to utilize him a little more in the pass game. And if they really are going to be down Slayton and down Shepard, and Galladay is only going to play 70% of the snaps potentially, then Barkley could have 10, 12 targets in this game, especially if there's, you know, if Danny Dimes can't get Kadarius Toney open or any of these other guys who he didn't expect to be playing with. So, you know, it's not my favorite matchup, but in terms of volume, I think Saquon clearly was ready for a full workload, and he got a pretty full one. They healthy scratched Devontae Booker before lock last week. So I think that's interesting. And the other running back, which he was in a unique usage role, even more, which is kind of scary, is Derrick Henry. Last week, AJ Brown and Julio Jones were both on the sideline for almost the entire second half. AJ Brown has a hamstring problem, and my guess is he's probably not going to play against the Jets, and he's probably not going to play the following week because the Buffalo Bills are coming into town in 3 weeks. And Julio Jones, I don't know. Vrabel, as usual, coming from the Belichick coaching tree, was really vague in his press conference why Jones was standing on the sideline with his helmet, you know, in the second half. He might have played like 3 or 4 snaps. That's it. So obviously the Titans can really, you know, try to distance themselves even more in this division. And Derrick Henry's workload is crazy already, but he's on the chase for 2K, and he's getting targets in the passing game now too. So he might even have even more of a usage bump, which should be a positive game script against the Jets. And you want to talk about potential for short fields. Zach Wilson threw, what, 4 picks last week or something like that? So there's
more on the way.
I mean, we're talking, it could be a 3, and dare I say, maybe a hot take. Maybe Henry scores four. Maybe Henry scores four times, and if there's anybody that can do it, it could be him. So my rant's done here. Just got to watch that game for sure with Henry.
Yeah, I think Henry's going to be big time. And then I will say this. Evan Ingram's 3K, and he had 6 targets.
Ooh.
I'm going to be honest with you. That has me almost wanting to go double tight end. Like, I don't think I'm not playing Kelsey this week. I can tell you that right now. I will have Travis Kelsey in my lineup, guaranteed. The question is, do I play a 3K Evan Ingram on the backside and hope that he gets like 10 targets this week and goes like 5 for 50 and a touchdown? Or do I play Kadarius Toney, or do I just do I just kind of get off the board and do something different? Because one of these other Giants is going to have to do something. Like, it can't be all Saquon. If Saquon's not getting 19 targets like Najee Harris, that I can guarantee you.
Why not? Najee Harris just had 19 targets with a .038.
Do you know why? I want you to tell me who's the offensive coordinator for the Giants?
Who's the offensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers?
No. We're talking about the Giants.
I had to Google him. It's Matt Canada.
It's Jason Garrett. Mr. Clapathon, yeah. He's not giving that man 19 targets. That I can assure you.
TJ, any closing thoughts with this conversation?
I'm not sure I can top anything there. So there it is. Saquon Barkley, 25 targets coming this week.
You heard it from TJ Lasig.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
If I'm never back on this show, now you'll know why. After
guaranteed.
Well, you know, Evan Ingram, in terms of the real life game, still did stinking Evan Ingram things. Lost a critical fumble. Was it last year? I know was it the Birds or the Dallas game? I know you keep track of the NFCs, where he dropped the go-ahead touchdown in the breadbasket in the fourth. That was a critical late season game. He just does Evan Ingram
things. I would gladly take Evan Ingram on the Panthers right now with the departure of Dan Arnold. I guarantee you'd start catching balls.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. All right, that was a fun show. So I know, Chief, you've been gone for a while, and we'll give TJ a couple minutes to think it's
since you've been gone. Yeah. That's my sing for the week. There it is.
I had to throw a little story time segment in here. So what's going on? What, anything for the good? Anything crazy happening going on in the life of the Chief?
Well, I think, and this is going to be something actually about my girls. When you have kids, man, they just really put things in perspective for you sometimes. Because, man, they don't have a care in the world, right? They don't worry about anything. And so I took them to this local cookie store we have called Twisted Sugar. And, you know, they have all these, you know, different varieties and different things like that. And so just to see the look on their faces, just to get cookies, like, it really made me think about, you know, how simple and happy your life can be if you just focus on the little things. You know what I'm saying? Just focus on the little things. And it's kind of the same way with fantasy. Like, there's so much information out there, and there's so many things we can look at. There's so much we can do. But, you know, kiss, man. Keep it simple, stupid. Is this defense bad? Yes. Can I target them? Yes. Okay, insert player A here, B here. And don't try to put a circle into a square hole, a square peg, you know? Just keep it simple, man. You know, we said on this pod that, you know, we're going to have some Millie winners, and we are going to take it down at some point this season. And I'm just going to try to keep it simple the whole way. So all you fantasy fans out there, you know, you don't have to play, you know, some random, you know, weird play just to win a Millie. Like, you look over these Millie lineups, yeah, it might take one, but a lot of times they just make the smart play, you know? They just make the smart play. You play Justin Herbert, and you play Mike Williams, and you stack the game, and you see what happens, right? It's you know, and sometimes we overthink it. Kids don't overthink it. They just go and enjoy the cookie. So,
sure.
You know, like, what I'm saying? One. Yeah.
That was a good one. TJ, you got any stories for us?
Any stories? Well, I went to Penn State this weekend. For the first time in a couple years. So that was my alma mater. Nittany Lion. Would have been better to go to the prior game against Auburn, but we had a friend that was a Nova guy, so had a big group, went to Penn State, did the tailgates, and it was good to be back into the college life. And then, you know, at night I had to go through the experience of the bar that was cool when I was there has a different name now. So that everything's different. But I still had to, you know, wait in line for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes, then eventually end up paying some bouncer $20 to get in. And it was just great to, you know, you can't beat just feeling like you're 22 again until the next morning. Then it's terrible. But yeah. it was a blast to be back. A bunch of my college buddies were with me as well. So I guess it's not really a story, but that's just what was top of mind for me. And yeah, that was my weekend this past weekend.
Hey, I've spent some time at State College and fun spot. One of my favorite sandwich places down there, late night sandwich places, is called Are You Hungry?
I'm familiar.
Conversation for another day. But Are You Hungry? Great sandwich spot. We like to talk about food on the show. We'll get to a GPP food of the day in a second. My quick story time is, and I'll throw it over to the chief for the closing GPP food of the day, is kind of like a little recruitment action going on here. I'm in a fantasy baseball auction league that my great uncle founded in 1991. And I'm in second place, and we're in the last week. I've been in it for like 7 or 8 years. Really deep league. I mean, we're talking 20 plus teams. The draft literally takes 12 hours, but it's in Atlantic City, which is awesome. But because of the pandemic and everything, we did it on Zoom, and it was kind of a circus this year, but we did it. But it's going to be so great to get back in person during a March Madness weekend for our draft in either early April or late March. So if you have any sharp players that are looking to, you know, interested in an awesome deep auction league with seriously rich tradition, like people make a weekend out of it. So the Friday before the draft, the next day, we have a huge league dinner at the Borgata. We typically do it at, oh my God, what's the name of the steakhouse at the Borgata? Regardless, it's awesome. Old Homestead. So it's just such a tradition, you know, fun to have some competitive bidding face to face, you know, kind of high stakes, but nothing crazy. A couple $100 for the entry fee. But we're always looking for some new players. So if you're on the East Coast, we actually have a couple people from North Carolina. Shout out to my friends, Jake Barton and Will Bryant, who actually work for Daily Fantasy Insider. So it's cool that they are finally in the league. And we have guys from Utah and out West coming in the league. So it's a blast. So if anybody's interested, hit me up. And TJ, I don't know what, you know, how much you play baseball, but I know you're in the area. So if you want to come party and put some bets in the sports book, at the least, come on down to Atlantic City in early April next year.
Oh yeah. I'm always down for an Atlantic City trip. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Sounds awesome.
Talk about being, you know, early 20s again. That'll bring back some good and bad memories. But anyway, GPP food of the day, and then we'll get out of here. Thanks for hanging with us. Chief, I know you got something cooking for us since you're back this week.
We're going to the old ballpark. Hot dogs. Get your hot dogs. Hot dogs. Man, listen, so many ways, so many things you can do to a hot dog. I'm going to be honest with you. I just can't beat a hot dog off my own grill. I mean, you know, you got Sonic and you got, you know, down here we've got a spot called Fuddruckers. You know, we've got a spot called Rush's. Like, we've got some hot dog places. You just can't beat one off your own grill, man. I'm serious. Like, I want to go in the store and buy my own personal pack. You know what I mean? Slap that thing on the grill. Ketchup, mustard, pickles, relish, onions, little melted cheese, whatever your heart's desire. All the toppings are at the Chief's home, you know? And do it yourself. DIY, do it yourself hot dogs. Can't beat it. Can't beat it.
I don't know how to follow that up, but there's nothing better than going to Yankee Stadium and paying $12 for a hot dog. So that's where I'm at.
Oh gosh,
I haven't been to a game in so long in the new stadium, and hopefully they sneak in the wild card. Because yeah, I'm from Long Island and I'm a little bit of a sports mutt, but man, Giancarlo Stanton this weekend, by the way. So I like a ballpark hot dog, Yankee Stadium. TJ, what do you put on your hot dog? Who has the best dog in the Philly area? Is there a spot?
I don't know if there's a particular spot. I mean, actually, the last time I probably had a hot dog was I went to the Dollar Dog Night at the Phillies a couple weeks back. So that was good. I'm also I like to play golf, and I'm a big hot dog after the ninth hole kind of thing at the golf course. It's like the perfect time for it, you know. And then, yeah, my hot dog, I'm a spicy mustard guy. Ideally, some chopped up onions on there, a little relish. Ooh. That'd be my go-to hot dog right there. And I'm totally with you. Aren't you like only supposed to eat one hot dog a year or some weird like stat like that? But F that. I'm a big hot dog guy. And if it takes a couple years off the life, so be it.
I know. I saw that floating around the web too. Costco hot dogs, by the way. Costco hot dogs are a pretty good dog. And maybe you wouldn't think so, but man, Costco is the way.
Tell that to Joey Chestnut. By those standards, he's on his way out of here by the end of the year. Joey Chestnut's just crushing hot dogs every season.
Yeah, you know what? What he hit? What he hit? 70? I thought, I'm like, how many years of
life? 75, I think.
Chief, if you're a hot dog connoisseur, whatever, I don't know. How long has it taken you to eat 75 hot dogs? Like, how many years of life? Like, how many hot dogs do you eat in a year? 75 and
how long would it take?
10 minutes is just incredible. We are down a rabbit hole right now, but I just want to hear the response.
This is the pod. How many years did it take me to eat 75 hot dogs? I know you're saying how long. I'm saying how many years, because I can't eat that many. I would go out on a limb and say it legit might take me 3 or 4 years to eat that many hot dogs, maybe even five. Like, you know, I eat them. I only eat hot dogs mostly at cookouts, like I said, on my own grill. Like, you know. Can't beat it. You know, and I'll probably eat two or three that day. And so you think, you know, two or three cookouts a year where I'm, you know, I'm really diving in. That's about 9 hot dogs, you know. So
now we're getting analytical. You know. Now we're getting analytical. Oh, all right. TJ, thanks for joining us, man. It was a blast. And where can the people find you on Twitter? And your Roto Grinders content, you know, I know you got some golf stuff coming up. So where can your stuff be found for RG?
Yep. Yeah. You guys can find me on Twitter at TJL5124DFS. And then for golf content, you can see me and do my rankings, expert survey, and then the value plays article that comes out on Tuesday nights where I give my favorite 6 plays under 7,500 on DraftKings.
Good luck this week.
I gave it a brief look and then looked away. It was ugly, but that's probably what I'll be taking a look at after this now.
Chief, where can the people find you?
At Chief Justice 06 on the Twitter machine, and just catch me around the streets at Roto, man.
Awesome stuff. Hit me up at the J Carlucci. Give us a like and subscribe on the pod. Give us some feedback, but most importantly, let us know where the best hot dog is, where you're at, because apparently we are, we're taking up time talking about hot dogs today, and I love it. So for TJ Lasig and Will Priester, I'm Justin Carlucci. Good luck this coming week, everybody.